Oftentimes, growing up, maybe we didn't learn a whole lot about the history of the church. I certainly didn't. Not until I got to the seminary. And when we read these passages from the Acts of the Apostles, oftentimes we don't equate them with things happening in the church, because the terms that we use today are so much more developed and different than what we read there in the Acts of the Apostles. But the actions and the things that are happening there are the same as today. So first of all, we see Paul and Barnabas sent out by the apostles to evangelize. They're working in Antioch. They build up a community in Antioch, and then they set off further north into Asia Minor, which is now western Turkey. And there they're evangelizing in Lystra and Derbe and Iconium and other cities. And many Gentiles. At first, they have the methodology that Paul is using. He goes into these cities and he goes to the synagogue and he preaches to the Jews. And he shows them how Jesus fulfilled all the promises of the Old Testament. But in this process, they're also bringing in Gentiles. And then when they get back to Antioch, they find two other guys have come from somewhere in Palestine and are telling everyone that the Gentiles can't enter the church unless they've been circumcised and become Jews first. And so Paul and Barnabas don't take it upon themselves to make a decision. If Peter's the boss, Peter's the Pope, we have to go and consult him and the apostles. And so they go back to Jerusalem. And there they consult Peter and the apostles. And this is the first ecumenical council of the church. We call it the Council of Jerusalem. That's what we just read about in the first reading. And so all the bishops of the world at that time, there were 11, Peter and the 10 other apostles, they all met. Paul described to them what he was doing, the great acceptance he was finding among the Gentiles. And then they decided. And the decision they made was that the Gentiles could come into the church directly without becoming Jews first. But then they wrote a letter. They wrote up the document of the council. And in that document, they said that those coming in would have to refrain from eating the meat sacrificed to idols. They would refrain from eating strangled animals and blood, the blood of animals. And refrain from unlawful marriage. If they were to do these things, they could come in to the church directly. And then they sent two specific envoys. We would call them today apostolic visitators, with this message to Antioch. And Paul and Barnabas went with them. And so these visitators not only proclaimed this verbally, but left the written document there in Antioch for them. And that's the same way the church operates today. We had a big problem in our seminaries back in the 70s and 80s. And so St. John Paul II named apostolic visitators. They went around to all the seminaries, investigated them, wrote up recommendations that they needed to do to straighten themselves out. And by the mid-90s, things were going much better. And I can tell you, one of the seminaries that I was in the mid-80s, I went back to visit in 2010, it was like a night and day difference. And now we just finished an apostolic visitation of all the women's religious orders that Pope Benedict asked for. And so this is still the process that we use today. And so then we have that in our first reading. And in the second reading, John has this mystical vision of the church. And for this reason, when we read the apostolic fathers, St. Augustine, St. Jerome, St. Benedict, and so on, they often refer to the church as the New Jerusalem, or as the heavenly Jerusalem. And this is why, because of this vision that John had and put out for us in the second reading. He says he sees this new Jerusalem with three gates on each side facing each direction. So oftentimes we see crosses with three lines, north, south, and 3 lines each west. That is based upon this vision, the 3 doors on each side, the 3 gates on each side of the heavenly Jerusalem. Then he says, the foundation stones in the walls will have the names of the 12 apostles. Exactly. Our church is founded and built upon the 12 apostles. And our history goes directly back to the 12 apostles without skip. St. Peter was the first pope. There have been 264 more, and Pope Francis is number 265 in a direct line going straight back without interruption throughout 2 millennia of history. And it's the same for me. I was ordained by a bishop, and that goes back to one of the apostles. And that's what we call apostolic succession. This is the foundation that John is referring to in the vision of the 12 apostles. And there are a lot more things in this vision that we could talk about. But I think it's important that we have that image. So when we read further and we embellish our faith by reading some of the apostolic fathers and doctors and good spiritual writing, when they talk about the heavenly Jerusalem, we recognize that symbol. Then, the gospel today. Jesus tells the apostles, this is from his discourse at the Last Supper, he says, I will be going away, but then I will come back. And he was referring to, of course, his 3 days in the tomb and his resurrection. But then he started talking about the Holy Spirit. So then he was talking about his ascension after the resurrection. And that when he ascended to the Father and left them as the established church, he would send his Holy Spirit to guide that church. And of course, this is another thing that we see. Some theologians would say the church was born the moment Christ died and St. Longinus pierced his side with the spear and the water and blood flowed from his side. So just as Eve was taken from the rib of Adam, so now at that moment the church is taken from the side of Christ. Others would say the church was in its final form and truly born on Pentecost with the reception of the Holy Spirit. And so these are the things as we prepare for the ascension next week and Pentecost the following week, we think about these great things, how the church was established and how the Lord has given us His Holy Spirit to guide us. And so we need to be preparing our hearts for the reception of that Holy Spirit who can guide us, who can be our partner, who will never fail us, who will always be there for us. But the Holy Spirit is the best of friends, never intrusive, never overbearing, never bothersome, but always there waiting for us to ask in order to help. And so we have to build that relationship. We have to consciously make that step toward the Holy Spirit, invite Him in, and work on that friendship and that relationship so we can truly experience that guidance. And I know those of the folks who come to daily Mass have heard this story probably 5 times. But it's what really set this in stone for me. And that is, this friend of, when I was in the missionary order, we had this benefactor, Monsignor Ron from Buffalo. He was on 3 papal commissions. And so he would come to Rome, and we would always pick him up at the airport, make sure he got to the place he was staying. I was usually designated as his chauffeur, and so then I would pick him up in the morning, take him to the Vatican for his meetings, pick him up after his meetings. He'd usually take us out for lunch, and then we'd get him back to where he was staying. And so one day I pick him up at the Vatican, and we're going to go to one of his favorite restaurants. And we get to the street, and I mean, the streets are always bad in Rome. If you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. But they're narrow, and then there are people trying to park, and they're double parked, and there's cars going every which direction. You can just barely slip in between them. And that's the way it was. I mean, it was almost impossible to drive one car down the road. If anyone came in the contrary direction, you were stuck. And so, triple parked, I mean, it was terrible. And I said, Monsignor, looks like we're going to have to park about 1/2 mile away and walk back. I mean, there's just no place to park around here. And he said, I'm going to pray to the Holy Spirit. You keep going around the block. And so he starts praying to the Holy Spirit. We take a turn, go down one side, take another turn, and halfway down the block, a car backs out, and we pull right in. And so God will even take care of stupid little things like parking places if we allow Him to do it. God is all powerful. And that's what Monsignor taught me that day, that there's nothing too small that God won't give us if we really need it, if it's good for us. And so we have to have that confidence and build that relationship and do that. And that's what Christ is starting to tell the apostle in this gospel. I'm going to send you this advocate, the Holy Spirit, and He's going to be with you, and He's going to guide you, and He's going to tell you what you're going to say. And they were kind of like, and they locked themselves in a room for 2 weeks. But then, when the Holy Spirit came upon them, they were ready for it. And they went out, and they were fearless. And they were getting beaten, and locked in jail. And then the Holy Spirit was breaking them out of jail. And it was awesome. And that's the way it can be for us in our lives too. The Holy Spirit's the same Holy Spirit. He wants to work the same miracles today. And Lord knows how much our world needs some of those miracles. And so let's try to make ourselves those ample, joyous instruments of the Holy Spirit that the apostles were.